Hi, folks. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, bringing you news from the Arizona Daily Sun from the Saturday, May 24th edition. I'm Flagstaff volunteer reader Joe, and as always, we'll kick it off with our front page headline stories. First up there, an article by Jessel Ortegan, Sun Staff reporter. This is Northland Preparatory Academy's new STEAM building nears completion. In production since May 2024, the new Science, Technology, Engineering, Art, and Mathematics, abbreviated STEAM, building at Northland Preparatory Academy, or NPA, is almost ready to welcome students into a new, dynamic space dedicated to refining STEM and art pathways. NPA planned to build the STEAM building for several years now, but needed to wait until it had the resources and funding to execute the plan. Now, a year since the school broke ground for construction, students, parents, faculty, and staff are anxiously awaiting the grand opening. Getting a foundation. In preparation for the development of this project, NBA worked with Sun Corridor and Arizona State University pre-COVID-19 to dedicate a pipe for the school meant to provide technology and off-the-grid power directly to the entire building. Before construction for the STEAM building started, NPA worked with SPS Plus Architects to draft a design for the facility based on the school's needs, budgets, and ideas, a process that took an additional year leading up to the building process. Once the school knew what it wanted the layout to look like, it hired Kinney Construction Services to assist in making the design take shape. Superintendent David Likens said NPA met with the architect and the construction team for 53 straight weeks to discuss ideas and how to start building from the ground up. They worked closely to ensure the new building would be able to efficiently accommodate each student in each subject. The science classes we have now were converted from a Gore building. It wasn't designed to be a science classroom, Likens said, so we had to create the best environment. The classrooms were all designed in terms of the subject that they're teaching, so it's built to optimize work or learning strategies for the future. NPA's target funding for the building's furniture, fixtures, and equipment was estimated to be $175,000. However, the school doesn't receive school bond opportunities. Saving money, working with local partners, and fundraising have been a big part of the continuous efforts to get the new building funded. Likens said the school is almost halfway to their target funding and hopes to get the community more involved in supporting this vision. What to anticipate? When the building is officially open for use, students will have access to brand new, fully equipped classrooms dedicated for teaching ceramics, biology, chemistry, engineering, and of course, mathematics as it applies to each subject. The current ceramics classroom doesn't have the space to hold all the necessary equipment for students to access in one place. But the new classroom will be lined with new pottery wheels and various outlets, and the kilns will now be in another room. With an identical setup, with the exception of different color schemes, the biology and chemistry classrooms will be next to each other. At the center of the two classes will be a shared storage space for all of the equipment. The new state-of-the-art science facilities will be completely equipped with everything a laboratory needs, from gas pipelines to fume hoods, making better quality, hands-on work more accessible for students. The new engineering classroom will provide 3D printers, new computers, and a garage door, which leads to an outside area designated for student projects. Carol Willis, the program director and upcoming assistant principal at NPA, is planning to reimagine and expand the entire engineering program. We've added computer science and engineering to grades 6 through 12, Willis said. So, just like students can experience strings or band throughout their senior experience, we've added computer science and engineering to that same pathway. According to Willis, since the school announced sixth graders would be able to access this new STEM opportunity, students have been buzzing about enrolling. With engineering and computer science opening up for the younger students, they too will get to learn how to code, build robots, and navigate and use a 3D printer. The engineering program will reintegrate other projects started in the past, like the eSports program and the middle school robotics club. Willis said it's clear students want the experience in the sciences and arts, and that it was just a matter of completing the infrastructure to be able to provide that. Now, with the space and equipment to house all of these brilliant subjects in one building, students will not only get to take advantage of new hands-on opportunities, but also teachers will be able to collaborate closely with one another to enhance the overall program. Collaboration is really important because we know that when excellent teachers are working together, they provide students with an excellent experience, but they also collaborate in ways we can't even imagine, Willis said. So we don't know what this building will ultimately produce, but we have a really good intuition that it's going to be powerful for our community. Embracing community. Likens said community is a key aspect to the creation of this building. The best way to build community is to have everybody's voice and everybody's part of the value system. Likens said, it really starts from inside. If we want to ask our larger community for help, we must have our own learning community that everybody's involved with. So in my mind's eye, we're all part of the component to do that. To make students feel more involved in the development of the building, NPA let kids in several science classrooms sign their names and a message on the beams that are now suspended to the ceiling for years to come. In commemoration of the new STEAM building, a time capsule was made, and each grade level got to store an artifact of their choice in it. On May 14th, the day of the Class of 2025 senior walk, each grade put their items inside of the time capsule to be opened in 25 years. Inside the STEAM building, there will be a designated spot for the time capsule, with a plaque above it indicating its significance and when it's dated to be opened. Likens said the time capsule isn't just for students to come back to, but to show the community the great efforts being made to finish this project. Willis said getting the students creatively engaged in the production has been rewarding and signals to her there is a creative endeavor to come. Once NPA is able to acquire their occupancy permit and the rest of the furnishings they need, the new building should be set to open in August for the new academic year. To be part of this initiative and support NPA, visit northlandprep.org to donate. And that was Northland Preparatory Academy's new STEAM building nears completion. Continuing with front page headline stories, here's one by digital editor Cody Bashore titled, Mayan Winds Offers Crafted Coffee and Culture. To Geronimo Vasquez, the story of Mayan Winds Coffee Emporium is one that centers around love. Beginning with his parents meeting in Guatemala, followed by his collaborator Juan Loera meeting his wife in Chiapas, Mexico, and then to Vasquez's own marriage to Alejandra Esparza Marin, the journey of Mayan Winds' official opening in 2021 persisted through various twists and turns. While the business started with its organic coffee, sourced directly from the indigenous people of Mexico and Guatemala, Mayan Winds offers much more alongside its cappuccinos, macchiatos, and traditional Mexican mochas. We don't sell only coffee. We offer an experience, said Esparza Marin, as the shop's extensive offerings include cocoa powder, cacao nibs, raw honey, salsa matcha, pinole, and corn cookies, all originally from Mexico, as well as Mexican jewelry, including earrings and bracelets. However, when it comes to the coffee specifically, Vasquez says it's Esparza Marin who is responsible for the final result customers have come to love over the past few years. She has experience as a chef in Mexico. She worked as a second, Vasquez said. She is very quality control, very precise, meticulous. Whereas me, I kind of learned coffee on the fly on the side. So I am not as meticulous and can't create those recipes the way she has. You look at the design, you look at the labels, that's all her and her creation. In order for Esparza Marin to work her magic behind the counter, the coffee beans must first make their journey north from Mexico, specifically Chiapas and Oaxaca, I guess it is. The connection between Vasquez and Loera, the source of Mayan Wynn's beans introduction to Flagstaff, began back in 2005 when the two met through a mutual mentor before the first coffee purchase was made in 2010. Initially purchasing 100 one-pound bags at a time, Vasquez would spend the next few months selling the bags through fundraisers during his time working at Killip Elementary School and to various others he knew. As the roasted beans awaited another order and shipment to Flagstaff, Vasquez said there was a notable deterioration in the quality of the beans. Instead of continuing a practice of bringing in smaller quantities of roasted beans, Vasquez explained he made the leap into purchasing green coffee beans with a plan to roast them locally. The first pallet of green coffee delivered in December 2019, and sales of the green beans began early in 2020. Though the pandemic interrupted the process in its first few months, Vasquez said the sales led to Mayan Wynn's Flagstaff's first commercial space late in 2020 before shifting to its current location in March 2021, just after he was appointed as Coconino County's District 2 supervisor. Though the space was initially used to house the green coffee beans while offering somewhat sporadic hours to enjoy a freshly brewed cup, Mayan Wynn's coffee became regularly available in September 2022, with an official grand opening in November of the same year. As the business has grown from a few bags of coffee being available more than a decade ago, so too has the mission for Mayan Wynn's and the space it occupies. A collaboration among Vasquez's family, Mayan Wynn's also serves as a communal space with a stage installed in January 2024 in order to host speakers and open mic nights. Additionally, the coffee shop encourages those interested to attend its various events such as chess days, workshops for poetry, lessons on creating traditional pine needle baskets, and other crafts, Spanish conversation groups, and even tastings of some of its popular offerings. Vasquez credits his mother and father in helping Mayan Wynn's grow to what it has become today, in part through helping invest early on while offering support for creating a space that embraces their culture's appreciation for community. Coming to the shop, it feels very nice because it's a safe place for me. I come from a rich culture where everybody cares for others, not with money, but you can come and tell them about problems, said Marina Vasquez, Vasquez's mother. You go and weave under a tree, you make baskets and it's a circle. People start sharing. Vasquez and Esparza Marin have traveled to Chiapas, one of the primary locations where the coffee beans are grown throughout the villages, and met the farmers. Joining with Loera in an effort to buy the coffee directly from the source, Vasquez said the goal has been to cut out the various stages of an exploitative process and create a fair market for farmers to earn a living off their crop. With more money remaining in the hands of those who grow and harvest the crop, Vasquez explained, the communities are better positioned to remain together rather than having fathers and husbands immigrate in order to find wages that can be sent back home. They started to sell coffee bag by bag, Esparza Marin said. We wanted to help support people in Central America, and I think that's the central point in this business, the goal and the mission. It's not just to sell coffee. It's to sell an experience, feelings and memories that we can share. The people who come here, they feel identified with us in some way. And that article was, Mayan Winds offers crafted coffee and culture. Here's our final front page headline story today, written by Sun Staff reporter Calliope J. Ludeker. This is Joy-Cone Flagstaff finishes expansion of its warehouse. Spirits were high last Tuesday at Joy-Cone Flagstaff as a ribbon-cutting ceremony marked the opening of the plant's expansion. Attended by company employees and the architects who worked on the project, the event was, for many, the first glimpse into the new 81,800-square-foot warehouse. It's the first one in the Joy Company. It was fun to show it off, said Joe Pozar, general manager of Joy-Cone Flagstaff. Joy Baking Group has seen extraordinary growth since its humble beginnings in 1918 as George and Thomas Cone Company, headquartered in its origin city of Hermitage, Pennsylvania. The company looked to expand westward in the mid-1990s. Demand for the cones had increased in the West. The cones, known for being both fragile and bulky despite their low weight, were expensive to ship across the country. The company selected Flagstaff after finding it checked the essential boxes: a high enough population to staff the factory fully and a prime location on Interstate 40. The parcel of land was purchased in 1995, with the building being fully opened for production in 2000. We knew then we would eventually be able to have over 300,000 square feet under roof. We've always had that target in the background, said David George, CEO of Joy Baking Group. With this expansion, we've hit that number. As for Flagstaff's tricky elevation, the initial baking process was trial and error. I've learned from my wife and family members that trying to bake here is almost impossible, Pozar said. Especially challenging were the company's cake cones, which need to rise in the mold before baking. We struggled with that for a couple of years, George said. After a great deal of experimentation with the formula, Pozar and George found the magic solution. The same flour used at the Hermitage plant. With the flour shipped in from Pennsylvania, baking goes off without a hitch. Joy-Cone Flagstaff has seen substantial growth in the past 5 years alone. The number of employees has more than doubled, adding over 150 new jobs to the community. As production continues to expand, the facility has struggled to accommodate the inventory required to meet demand. The new expansion, in addition to a massive increase in storage volume, includes an 1,800-square-foot administrative office, a tractor-trailer parking area, and a larger employee parking lot. It also opens the door for continuing growth and job advancement in the coming years. As of 2016, Joy Baking Group is a 100% employee-owned business. The individual ownership of each employee increases in value along with the company. The group also takes pride in contributing to Flagstaff. It is a supporter of local organizations, big and small, such as United Way of Northern Arizona, Toys for Tots, and even little leagues and high schools. We try to do our part in being active in the community, said Michelle Rabun, human resources manager at Joy-Cone Flagstaff. While the company has a history of offering public tours, the COVID-19 pandemic and the construction of the warehouse rendered them infeasible. Tours have not resumed due to changes in food safety regulations. We have to reconsider what that will look like in the future, Rabun said. We need to be thoughtful about how we're going to go forward with tours. On a national level, Joy Baking Group has progressed into baking not only cones, but also cookies and graham cracker crusts. While the Flagstaff facility is not currently equipped to step into production of these assets, it is not off the table for future consideration. I could see it happening here, George said. If we do it out west, we're going to do it in Flagstaff. George, who had a hand in starting up the western wing of the company, is a third-generation descendant of Albert George, one of the original founders of the George and Thomas Cone Company. Growing up, taking part in the family business was something he always dreamed of, and he has certainly fulfilled the legacy. Throughout the years, he has been fully hands-on within the company, taking part in everything from operations to sales. It's fortunate that I had the opportunity, and really fortunate that it's something I was looking forward to, George said. So far, so good. And that was Joy Cone Flagstaff finishes expansion of its warehouse. And again, that wraps up our front page headline articles for today. So let's see what we can find in the interior stories. Next up today, we have a news brief from the Daily Sun staff. This is City of Flagstaff, Coconino County announced Memorial Day closures. Flagstaff City Hall offices will be closed on Monday, May 26th, in honor of Memorial Day, reopening at 8 a.m. on Tuesday, May 27th. In addition to the city offices at 211 West Aspen Avenue, the East Flagstaff Community Library at 3000 North 4th Street, the Flagstaff City Coconino County Public Library at 300 West Aspen Avenue, the Hal Jensen Recreation Center at 2403 North Isabel Street, the Joe C. Montoya Community and Senior Center at 245 North Thorpe Road, and the Cinder Lake Landfill and Hazardous Product Center at 6770 East Landfill Road will also be closed. The Aquaplex at 1702 North 4th Street will be open from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m., and the J. Lively Activity Center at 1650 North Turquoise Drive will be open and operating for regularly scheduled events. There will be no residential trash or recycling services on Monday. Customers with service normally scheduled on Monday will have their trash collected on Tuesday, May 27th, and their recycling collected on Wednesday. Customers with service normally scheduled on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday will see no change. There will also be no commercial trash or recycling services on Monday, and normal commercial collection services will resume on Tuesday. No bulk trash will be picked up during the week of May 26th. For Coconino County, its administrative center, the county manager's office, the county attorney's office, and the county superior court and justice courts will be closed on Monday, May 26th, in observance of the Memorial Day holiday. Coconino County Health and Human Services, or CCHHS, offices and clinic will be closed. An animal services officer will be available on May 26th from 7 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Contact the CCHHS Animal Services Office at 928-679-8756 to leave a message, and an officer will return the call. Call 911 for emergencies. Parks and Recreation offices will be closed. However, county parks and natural areas are open for the public to enjoy. And that was City of Flagstaff, Coconino County announced Memorial Day closures. Continuing with briefs from the Daily Sun staff, this is 2-month closure of East Cedar Avenue begins Tuesday. Full closures of Flagstaff's East Cedar Avenue will begin on Tuesday to enable expedited construction on two city projects during local school summer break. The closures are projected to last until early August, according to the city. Detours for both vehicles and pedestrians, including the renovated Linda Vista Drive, will be available and clearly signed, and Mountain Line Transit will operate modified routes and temporary stops in the project area. business and residential access will remain open. Cedar will be closed at the intersection with Lockett Road and 4th Street to permit the replacement of the existing traffic signals with a new roundabout, and between Grandview Drive and Monte Vista Drive, where installation of a new storm drain system is in progress. The fourth Lockett Roundabout project also includes improved pedestrian crossings and upgrades to water and sewer infrastructure. Additional information about that project is available at fourthlockettproject.com. The storm drain improvements between Grandview and Monte Vista are part of the Spruce Wash suite of flood mitigation projects, also called the Museum Fire Flood Projects, intended to reduce the risk and impact of post-wildfire flooding in areas downslope from the burn scar of the 2019 Museum Fire. More information about those projects is available at museumfloodprojects.com. Questions about the projects can be directed to info@fourthlockettproject.com, info@museumfloodprojects.com, or to the Spruce Wash Project hotline at 928-255-5153. Our next brief is Flagstaff Unified School District seeking feedback on request to rename Flagstaff High School Athletic Field. Flagstaff Unified School District, or FUSD, is seeking public input on a request to name the athletic field at Flagstaff High School after Rick Smith. According to an April 21st announcement posted to the district's website, a group of community members has submitted this request. FUSD's policies and procedures around naming facilities, which were recently updated, are to request input from school and community members before a naming review committee makes a recommendation to the superintendent. The feedback form is available for public comment through Friday, June 20th. Smith is a former head football coach at Flagstaff High School, and the school's teams won 4 state 2A championships in a row from 1981 to 1984 during his tenure. He is a graduate of Northern Arizona University and has served in local law enforcement as a teacher and coach for the district. Smith was also the first executive director of NAU's High Altitude Training Center and served as CEO of both the American Youth Soccer Organization and the Northern Arizona Healthcare Foundation. He is part of the inaugural class of the Flagstaff Sports Hall of Fame and was named Arizona Coach of the Year in multiple publications. Feedback can be submitted through filling out a form at docs.google.com/forms/d/e/1FAIPQLSCFZIU. Yeah, good luck with that one, folks. Next brief. Applicants sought for Williams School Board vacancy. Coconino County Superintendent of Schools Cheryl Mango Paget is seeking applicants for an appointment for the Williams Unified School District Governing Board set to expire December 31, 2026. Applicants must be Arizona registered voters and residents of the school district for at least 1 year prior to the date of appointment. Applicants or their spouses cannot be an employee of the district. A first review of applications will commence 30 days following the posting on June 19, 2025. Applications can be downloaded at this address at coconino.az.gov/2855/governing-board. Completed applications should be submitted by email to sfobar@coconino.az.gov or by fax to 928-526-1469 or by mail addressed to Coconino County School Superintendent, 2384 North Steves Boulevard, Flagstaff, Arizona 86004. For all applications, an original signed document is required. Applications will be accepted until the board opening is filled. An advisory committee might be assembled, consisting of district residents and a current board member, to conduct interviews and advise Mango Paget on the appointments. For more information, contact Stacy Fobar, Program Coordinator for the Coconino County Superintendent of Schools Office, at 928-679-8070 or by email at sfobar@coconino.az.gov. We have more briefs for you, but I'll take a brief pause here to remind you that you're listening to the Arizona Daily Sun from Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds programming is directed to those who cannot use print material due to a disability. Listen to our live streams and learn how you can support us at the website sunsounds.org. Or you can also get our stream and on-demand programs with the new Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android devices. Okay, continuing on, our next brief, county warns of new scam targeting property owners. The Coconino County Manager's Office was made aware of a potential scam targeting county residents and property owners. Residents reported receiving an email from, quote, Coconino County Planning and Zoning Division, unquote, regarding an outstanding application review and renewal fee associated with a conditional use permit application for their property, as well as an attached PDF invoice for payment. The county manager's office reminds residents that conditional use permits, as well as all planning and zoning matters, are administered by the county's Community Development Department. Community Development also does not generate invoices for payment or communicate past due notices via email. All legitimate email communications from Coconino County staff or elected officials will come from an @coconino.az.gov email address. Residents who might have received similar fraudulent communications are asked to contact Community Development at 928-679-8850. Next brief today, city to host public meeting on design of new Sunnyside Center. The City of Flagstaff will host a public meeting about the future Montalvo Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, or STEM, Education Community Center on Thursday, May 29th at the Aquaplex. The meeting is a chance for community members to provide input on the design of the new facility and will begin at 5:30 p.m. The Montalvo STEM Center will replace an aging and disused fire station at 2230 East Spruce Avenue, adjacent to the Joel Montalvo Little League Field. In March of this year, the Flagstaff City Council approved a $3.1 million design and build contract with local firm Lovin Contracting to tear down the old firehouse and create a new community center in its stead. This is one of the largest investments into the Sunnyside neighborhood that the city has ever made, Councilman Anthony Garcia said following City Council vote. City staff and Lovin Contracting have emphasized the importance of neighborhood fit for the new center. The initial concept for the facility includes separate restroom facilities to support the baseball field and a main building with a footprint of roughly 3,000 square feet. The mural on the wall facing the baseball field, installed by artist Sonia London Hall in 2019, will be reincorporated into the new building. For related questions, contact the city's Public Works Director, Scott Overton, at scott.overton@flagstaffaz.gov. And wrapping up this set of news briefs, this is Tuba School District Receives Bleeding Control Stations. Northern Arizona Healthcare, or NAH, announced recently that it donated 10 bleeding control stations to the Tuba City Unified School District, or TCUSD. The stations will be available at school sites to help save lives and stop life-threatening bleeding during an emergency. The new stations were made possible by a $7,500 donation from NIH's Office of Philanthropy. NIH has delivered the stations to TCUSD facilities, and they are being installed in all six of the district schools in the coming weeks. NIH operates the only state-designated Level 1 trauma center in northern Arizona at Flagstaff Medical Center. The trauma team conducts many injury prevention programs and operates a Stop the Bleed community training program to help educate the region on how to save a person's life in an emergency. The program is spearheaded by Injury Prevention Outreach Coordinator Sean Bowker, who has been leading Stop the Bleed courses since 2018. The injury prevention team donated a training kit to TCUSD and has held three trainings to teach district employees. We are so pleased that we are able to help out our partners at the Tuba City United, School District with this contribution, said Larry Kushner, NIH's chief philanthropy officer. These bleeding control station donations are an important commitment to our community in helping keep students protected. Having these kits readily available in case of a traumatic event is crucial. Lives can be saved if people are trained properly on using these stations during an emergency. NIH previously donated 43 stations to the Flagstaff Unified School District, which installed them in every school and several other facilities. Continuing with local news from Daily Sun staff, this is Flagstaff Unified School District offering free meals for kids through summer program. The Flagstaff Unified School District, or FUSD, will again be sponsoring the summer food service program, which is meant to provide children aged 18 and younger with nutritious meals throughout the summer. The free meal service will begin June 2nd at six FUSD school sites and continue through the summer. Meals will be provided to all children at no charge and will be the same regardless of race, color, national origin, sex, disability, or age. Discrimination is strictly prohibited during the meal service. FUSD's announcement said it is no longer able to offer grab-and-go meals, parent pickup, or multi-day meal distribution due to changes at the federal level. The summer meals program is federally funded. Meals must be consumed on-site, with the exception of Loop, which will have meal pickup available in the morning. Excuse me. Here are the schedules for the 2025 summer food service program locations in FUSD schools. Cromer Elementary School, June 2nd to June 27th, Monday through Thursday, lunch 11 a.m. to noon. Killip Elementary School, June 2nd to June 27th, Monday through Thursday, breakfast 8 to 9 a.m., lunch 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Kinsey Elementary School, June 2nd to June 27th, Monday through Friday, breakfast 8 to 9 a.m., lunch 10:45 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Loop Public School, June 2nd to June 27th, Monday through Friday, meal pickup 9:30 to 10:30 a.m., lunch 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Marshall Elementary School, June 2nd to July 18th, Monday through Friday, breakfast 7:30 to 8:30 a.m., lunch 11 a.m. to noon. Thomas Elementary School, June 2nd to June 27th, Monday through Friday, breakfast 8 to 9 a.m., lunch 11 a.m. to noon. More information is available at FUSD1.org. And that was FUSD offering free meals for kids through summer program. Next up today, we have some regional news from the Daily Sun staff. Central Western Arizona lands enter Stage 2 fire restrictions. State and federal public lands across western and central Arizona entered Stage 2 fire restrictions on Friday, May 23rd, prompted by hot and dry weather conditions. Restrictions were already in effect on state, federal, and tribal lands in eastern Arizona, where the Greer Fire has been burning over the past 10 days, and in southern Arizona. Currently, most of Coconino County is not under fire restrictions, but the Apache Sitgreaves National Forest, which overlaps the southeastern corner of the county, entered Stage 2 fire restrictions last week, and private property within the forest boundaries is subject to the same rules. The new restrictions affect state of Arizona lands in Gila, La Paz, Maricopa, Mojave, Yavapai, and Yuma counties, and Bureau of Land Management, or BLM, lands in La Paz, Maricopa, southern Mojave, northern Pinal, western Pima, Yavapai, and Yuma counties. Under Stage 2 fire restrictions, campfires and charcoal fires are not allowed outside of developed recreation sites or improved sites. Portable liquid or gas-fueled stoves are allowed as long as they possess a shutoff valve. Smoking is only allowed in an enclosed vehicle or building. Gas-fueled power tools or welding activities are prohibited. Discharging a firearm is only allowed while engaged in a lawful, permitted hunt. This restriction also applies to recreational shooting sites in the BLM's Phoenix District, Baldy Mountain, Box Canyon, Church Camp Road, and Saddleback Mountain. Fireworks are prohibited year-round on both BLM and state lands, and recreational target shooting is also prohibited year-round on state lands. Additional information about statewide fire restrictions is available at wildlandfire.az.gov. Specific information for Coconino County residents is available at coconino.az.gov/fire restrictions. Greer Fire Update. As of Thursday, May 22nd, containment around the Greer Fire had reached nearly 90%. The fire ignited on May 13th and grew rapidly, fueled by high winds, before being contained at a final size of roughly 20,000 acres. The cause remains under investigation. Highway 260 has reopened in both directions, and evacuation orders for nearby communities have been lifted. And that was Central Western Arizona lands enter Stage 2 fire restrictions. Next up today, we have a couple of obituaries for you. This first one is for Dr. John Hildebrand, January 5th, 1933 to May 13th, 2025. Dr. John Earl Hildebrand, MD, with his wife of nearly 70 years at his side, died peacefully at home on May 13th, 2025. He was 92. A resident of Flagstaff for 59 years, he was a respected surgeon and an avid birdwatcher, hiker, and skier. He was a loving husband, father, grandfather, and great-grandfather, and a friend to many. Dr. John was born January 5, 1933, in Ithaca, New York. He graduated from Texas A&M University and the University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston, Texas. In medical school, he met and married his wife, Rebecca Becky Bentley, June 11, 1955. He served in the U.S. Army Medical Corps in Germany for 3 years before returning to Santa Barbara, California, to complete his residency in general surgery. In August 1966, he and Becky moved to Flagstaff with their 4 daughters to settle into life, and what a life it was. Dr. John began his medical career in Flagstaff and Williams when there were no surgical subspecialists in the region, so he was a true general surgeon. Throughout his long career, he was also an active leader in the community. He served on the Flagstaff Unified School District School Board from 1975 to 1980, led Boy Scout and Girl Scout hikes, mapped a section of the Arizona Trail, served as naturalist for Colorado River trips, and supported local environmental and scientific programs. Always curious and scientific by nature, he explored Arizona and every continent. He hiked all the official trails in the Grand Canyon, and some that weren't. He cultivated a childhood interest for birds into a lifelong passion and a life list of at least 4,199 birds. The benefit of bird watching, he said, was that you had to be outside to do it. This love of the outdoors and the natural world is his legacy to his family. He is survived by his wife, Becky, daughters Margot Donnelly, Beth Battles, Kathleen Wavering, Carolyn Kors, and brother Paul Hildebrand. He also leaves his cherished 12 grandchildren and 4 great-grandchildren. Celebration of Life, Sunday, August 3rd, 2025, 2 to 5 p.m., at the Elks Club, 2101 North San Francisco Street, Flagstaff. Condolences may be shared with the family at NorvellOwensMortuary.com. And that was an obituary for Dr. John Hildebrand. And next up, we have an obituary for Sandra Leah Rock, April 7th, 1945 to April 10th, 2025. Sandra Leah Rock took flight from her earthly body on April 10th, 2025, at the age of 80, in Tucson, Arizona. Born on April 7, 1945, in Eugene, Oregon, Sandy moved at a young age with her mother, Harriet Harvey Griffin, and stepfather, Frank T. Griffin, to Globe, Arizona. She graduated from Globe High School in 1963, and soon after married Tyrone W. Rock of Flagstaff. Together, they built a life rooted in the Rock family's Flagstaff heritage. Following Ty's retirement in 2001, they moved to the village of Oak Creek and later relocated to Tucson in 2020 to be closer to family. While Sandy was a devoted wife and mother, her life was marked by courage and independence through her personal endeavors and growth. From running a summertime fruit stand on Cedar Avenue to working for the Arizona Daily Sun and ADOT, she ultimately found success as a realtor in Flagstaff. She later continued employment in the village of Oak Creek, finding joy working at Sedona Boutiques. Her resilience, tenacity, and faith in the Lord endured through multiple spinal surgeries. Sandy loved traveling the world, caring for animals, especially hummingbirds, and gardening with a pride in her blooming orchids, enjoying water fountains, playing penny slot machines, and relaxing on the beach along the Sea of Cortez. Sandy is survived by her daughters, Tammy Becker of Tucson, Arizona, and Tracy Hoover of Austin, Texas, grandchildren Kyle, Madison, Samantha, and Kayla, sister Cheryl Chang of Gilbert, Arizona, nieces and nephews, extended family Joni and Chaz Martinez, and countless friends, old and new. She was preceded in death by her beloved husband, Tyrone Rock, mother, Harriet Griffin, father, Frank T. Griffin, sister, Teresa Terry Griffin, brother, Ted Griffin, and her cherished Yorkie, Taffy. A private burial will be held in fall 2025 at the Sedona Community Center. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to a legitimate nonprofit animal shelter or rescue organization. Sandy's kindness, sparkle, love, and friendship will live on in the hearts of all who knew her. And that was an obituary for Sandra Leah Rock, and that wraps up our obituaries for today. Next up, we have our letters to the editor for today. And first up there is headlined, "Passage of Budget Package Disappoints Crane Constituent." Congress just voted to make America hungrier and sicker. Early Thursday morning, the House narrowly passed a massive bill that is set to cut programs like Medicaid and SNAP. Our representative, Representative Eli Crane, was one of those who voted in favor of cuts to programs that will negatively impact his constituents. President Trump called the bill the most significant piece of legislation that will ever be signed in the history of our country, and he may not be wrong about that. Here's what it will do if it passes in the Senate, according to the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office and the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Cut Medicaid by at least $716 billion, the largest cut in the program's history, with an estimated 7.6 million people at risk of losing Medicaid. Cut health coverage for roughly 15 million people, preventing access to preventative and primary care, care for life-threatening conditions, and treatments for chronic conditions. Cut federal funding for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, by roughly $300 billion, or about 30%, the largest cut in history. These cuts will affect nearly 11 million people, including 4 million children. Extend tax cuts that benefit the wealthiest Americans. In 2027, it will give households earning more than $1 million a year an average tax cut of roughly $90,000, while low-income households will receive an average of just $90. Add $3.1 trillion to the nation's debt. In Arizona's 2nd Congressional District alone, over 330,000 households use SNAP. About half of the district uses Medicaid, with higher concentrations in the more rural parts of our state. Representative Crane and Congress have done a disservice to Arizona and America, including its children, elderly, and rural constituents. What do these cuts get us? Higher levels of income inequality and an increase to the deficit. As the Senate is set to vote on its version of the bill in the coming month, it is necessary that we, as well as Senator Kelly and Senator Gallego, speak out against this reckless bill. Signed, Reyna Castillo, Flagstaff. And our next and final letter for today, road closure leads to Plaza Way Madhouse. So who's the dimwit that decided to close off Reardon Road while the university construction is still going on? Plaza Way is now a madhouse. Signed, Mark Cederholm, Flagstaff. Returning now to local articles from the Daily Sun staff, this is Delta Dental of Arizona Foundation awards grants to nonprofits. The Delta Dental of Arizona Foundation awarded grants to 5 nonprofit organizations in Arizona for their work in oral health and nutrition. The grants totaled $109,711 and will be used to support projects and services promoting good oral health practices and increased access to dental care, as well as nutritional access programs in a variety of settings. Populations served by these programs include underserved children, pregnant women, adults, and seniors. Creek Valley Health Clinic and Polara Health both received these grants for the first time this year. The Flagstaff Family Food Center, Northern Arizona Council of Governments, and Northern Arizona Dental Days have also been past recipients in addition to this year. Delta Dental of Arizona believes in healthier lives for everyone and is proactively working to remove barriers to care across our state, said Foundation Executive Director Barb Koza, in the announcement. Through this grant program, Delta Dental of Arizona continues to make critical strides in whole person health initiatives and equitable access to care. Delta has also partnered with several other organizations in Northern Arizona on efforts meant to further education and access to health. It has a free dental care resource guide with a directory of low-cost dental clinics in the state on its website, for example, and has given over $20 million to support oral health education, disease prevention, and food assistance programs across Arizona since 2010. And that was Delta Dental of Arizona Foundation awards grants to nonprofits. Time grows short here, but here's a quick announcement from the Community Almanac. This is for an event occurring today from 6:30 to 9 p.m., Celestial Saturday at Americana. It's at the Americana Motor Hotel, 2650 East Route 66 in Flagstaff. Further information at 928-833-3060. Come to Americana Motor Hotel for an out-of-this-world experience with cultural astronomer Dr. Danielle Adams. As the twilight sky darkens, you'll see close-up telescopic views of the moon and planets as Danielle shares the cultural backstories behind some well-known star names like Aldebaran, Betelgeuse, and many more. Join us by the fire pits and enjoy s'mores. And again, that's Celestial Saturday at Americana Motor Hotel, 2650 East Route 66, from 6:30 to 9 p.m. today. I'm afraid that's all the time we have for news from the Arizona Daily Sun today. For Sun Sounds of Arizona, I'm volunteer reader Joe, and I'd like to thank you for listening. I hope you have a wonderful week ahead, and I will catch you next time. Stay well until then. Bye for now.